Good afternoon, everyone. Happy Wednesday. Happy St. Patrick's Day, March 17th, 2021. Yes, it is St. Patrick's Day. I am Hank Jones. You are on Hank Jones Poly Sports, part of Global Patriot Radio on Blog Talk Radio Network. Every Wednesday at 5:30 for roughly 1.5 to 2 hours. Tonight we're going 2 hours because we have a couple of special guests that will be on later when we talk about March Madness. Yes, March Madness is here. Hey, guess what? Global Patriot Radio is 7 shows over 7 days with 8 different hosts. Let me tell you about them. Every Monday, the Vito Esposito Show featuring Vito Esposito with Big Al, Mama Mia, No Sharia. Every Tuesday, Eric is here with Radio Free Kafiristan. Every Tuesday. Every Wednesday, me, Hank Jones. Every Thursday, Paul Sutliff with the Sutliffian Report. Fridays, Andrew Herod is in. Conservative Casual Friday, a.k.a. Islam in Focus. Saturday nights at 10 o'clock, Minister Usama Dakduk and the beautiful Christie reveal the truth about Islam. And then Sundays, Eric is back. Sunday afternoons at 3 o'clock Eastern, I believe, with Real Interfaith Dialogue. Every week, you can count on us. You really can. Let's see. If you want to call into the show, and tonight might be a good time, although the lines might be pretty jammed because we'll have a couple of us talking, but you can still call. That number is 319-527-6706. If you have any feedback you'd like to send me, you don't feel like screaming at me on the show, you can email hjpsports1980@gmail.com. I'm on Facebook. Just type in Hank Jones Poly Sports. It'll take you right to me. I'm on Twitter, @HPolySports. And especially with this March Madness stuff, although there's been a couple, well, not developments, but a couple predictions that had me kind of worried. But, hey, that's what happens when it's March Madness time. Hey, last Saturday, some very sad news from the world of boxing. Marvelous Marvin Hagler. He was a middleweight champ for most of the 1980s. He passed away unexpectedly at just 66 years of age. No cause had been given yet. Frankly, he got royally screwed in his last fight, which was a loss to Sugar Ray Leonard. So basically, he hung up the gloves. He held the middleweight title from 1980 to 1987. His fight against Hearns was one for the ages. It's pretty much the middleweight version of the Foreman Ron Lyle fight from 1976. Remember that, where they just keep Foreman and Lyle just kept knocking each other down. Finally, Foreman won, but I mean, it was almost by attrition. This fight rivaled that. It only went 3 rounds, but like somebody said, it was short, but man, you couldn't pack much more into 3 rounds. Absolutely an incredible fight. So anyway, he hung him up after the Leonard fight. Leonard basically used smoke and mirrors. Anytime Hagler got close, he'd start throwing these little flurries of punches, these little circles that never really hit anything but Marvin Hagler's arms, occasionally his gloves. He didn't hit him. He didn't rock him at all. But they gave him the fight, and Hagler wanted a rematch. Leonard said he was retiring, so he did. In 1990, Leonard came out of retirement to fight light heavyweight champion Donnie Lalonde. Now, he did not fight Donnie Lalonde at light heavyweight. He fought him like at 172. I think Leonard had become super middleweight champion at that point as well. And Leonard won the title. He then offered Hagler a rematch. By that point, Hagler didn't need to come out of retirement. He was a fun fighter to watch, though, Marvin Hagler. I'll tell you what, he was a true heavyweight or a true middleweight. He was a true middleweight. He wasn't a blown-up welterweight or a slimmed-down light heavyweight. You know, you see a lot of those guys that do that. He wasn't that. He was just a classic middleweight. I mean, just a great fighter. Sad loss, definitely. Another loss, this one to the entertainment world, Monday, the passing of Yaphet Kotto at age 81. His first big impact role was as Kananga or Mr. Big in 1973's Live and Let Die, which, by the way, was also Roger Moore's debut as James Bond. He followed it up with role. He played Idi Amin in the movie Raid on Entebbe. He also played Parker in 1979 film Alien. Remember that? He had a great performance as a cynical but hopeful lifer in the prison drama Brubaker, a very underrated Robert Redford film. I usually think Redford films are overrated. Not that one. That one was underrated. It was a great flick, and he was good in it. Without a doubt, though, my personal favorite role he had was Agent Alonzo Mosley in the 1998 movie Midnight Run. Much as I've come to detest Robert De Niro, the raving lunatic activist, he was fantastic in Midnight Run, as was Yaphet Kotto, as was Charles Grodin, the late Dennis Farina. And so Yaphet Kotto is gone at 81 years old. Great actor, though. Great actor. Want to welcome Indie Hawk KB to the chat and Banjo 80 as well. Indie Hawk's going to be joining us later in the program to talk some March Madness. On the phones, I think we've got Sue from New Mexico. Hope she's doing better. And we've got Hawkeye Mike calling in from, I believe, Colorado this week, and he's going to talk with us. Brother Tommy might get on later as well. Sort of gives us a different view. Brother Tommy would have seen more of the SEC stuff since his kids go to Florida, and so he's watched at least their games. Mike, being out in the West, well, you know, seen Colorado. He's probably seen more of Gonzaga than anyone. Indy Hawks in the Midwest, and so he knows what's going on in the Big Ten. I've really only watched mostly Big Ten. I've watched clips of other stuff, but I haven't sat and watched full games of other games this year. I just haven't. You know, it's been that kind of year. So, but it'll be good to talk. Death actually also occurred last Sunday at the Grammy Awards. No, nobody at the Grammys died. But what we witnessed was the death of dignity. Yeah, last Sunday, dignity at the Grammys, dignity went in a big way. There's no getting it back for those folks, I'm afraid. I've only seen short snippets of this, but I'm telling you, dignity is gone. The host guy, whoever he is, he pretty much embarrassed all award show hosts for eternity. He gets out there and goes on how it's been his fantasy to be with Cardi B. Really? Telling you folks, this was just grim. You just don't come back from that. You just don't. We're talking worse than the cop who craps his pants in the film The Pope of Greenwich Village. I mean, seriously, that cop has an easier road back on the dignity recovery trail. Those folks at the Grammys, not getting it back. They really aren't, I'm telling you. Let's get to some politics news. I'm not sure how this one's going to play in the long run. Monday, the Vatican decreed that gay unions cannot be blessed by the church because God does not bless sin. Now you're thinking, if you think along the lines that I think, I'm not an anti-gay person, but when it comes to gay marriage, I would agree. God does not ordain gay marriage. But where it's surprising here, the church, since the papacy of Pope Francis, has become decidedly more liberal. But anyway, the Congregation for the Doctrine of Faith, which is basically the orthodoxy arm, if you will, of the Catholic Church, they issued a formal response to the question of whether Catholic clergy can bless gay unions. It was a formal two-page announcement. It was published in 7 languages, and it was approved by Pope Francis. The decree differentiated between the stance that gays should be welcomed and blessed in the church, but not their same-sex unions, since any sacramental union would be akin to marriage. Now, the Vatican holds that gays must be treated with dignity and respect, but that gay sex is intrinsically disordered. I use those two words in quotes, intrinsically disordered. Catholic teaching holds that marriage is a lifelong union between a man and a woman, and as part of God's plan intended for the sake of creating new life. The document further stated that because gay unions are not intended to be a part of that plan, they cannot be blessed. Like I said, this is definitely, I don't want to say a swerve. Pope Francis and others have advocated for civil protections for same-sex couples. That is not the same thing, though, as ordaining gay marriage. While the church says it must not judge the person, it cannot bless any sexual activity outside of marriage. Blessing a same-sex union may give the false impression of a sacramental equivalence to marriage, which would be erroneous and misleading. Like I said, that's kind of a shock to me. Pretty much everything under Pope Francis, the church has taken a liberal stance. And frankly, given the somewhat recent history of the church's abuse scandals, along with numerous settlements, it wouldn't have been a surprise to hear the church actually bless them, as has actually been done by several mainline Protestant denominations. Now, it would seem the church might have been on the road to acquiescing, frankly, to both a growing liberal constituency, as well as, you know, maybe finding a way to absolve itself of past sinful behaviors on the part of clergy and other personnel. It also would have been seen, though, by many probably as hypocritical or condoning the behavior of those priests and other officials who not only, frankly, abused church members, but in particular, they abused minors and youth. Yeah, either the church has found some backbone, or they acknowledge that the Bible can't be reinterpreted, let alone rewritten, in order to let those folks and the greater church off the hook. So that's, think what you will. I think it's kind of, you know, Pope Francis the last couple of years has been decidedly liberal. I mean, he's been anti-America. He was anti-President Trump, joined the club. He's anti-capitalist. He seems to be anti-everything about the planet. So to hear this is, I don't want to say a welcome announcement for those that are gay and in committed relationships. I don't want to say you have my sympathy, but you have my understanding. I understand someone who is gay and is a committed Christian and would want to bless in some way their commitment. That's to be applauded, obviously. But biblically, it just can't be supported. I'm sorry. And if you don't feel that way, but it can't be. Again, though, it doesn't mean that it's the only sin out there. I mean, you know, we don't set the murderer free and just say, you know what? It happens. You know, we don't the embezzler, the drug dealer, whatever. I mean, it's, you know, I know some of it's criminal versus sin, but the case is pretty clear in the Bible. I know there are people that say, oh, that was back. So, okay, here's the thing. Somebody once said, you know what, when that was written, there wasn't even such a thing as sexual relationships, and sexuality hadn't really been devised. Really? So wait a second. You believe in a God that can create everything, but he doesn't know about sexual relationships and sexual proclivity? Come on. When you do that, you turn God into a monopoly player who's just a little better at it than everyone else. That's not what God is. So anyway, enough about that. Plastic Pelosi appeared on ABC's This Week with George Step All Over Me. I'm sorry, Stephanopoulos. Emily, she was rambling on about the current border crisis. She blamed President Trump, of course. Let's just get that out of the way. She basically rambled incoherently. Again, not a shock. Basically, she was saying that AP Biden inherited an untenable situation from the Trump administration. And then digging further into her insanity, she also said the refugees coming in are climate refugees. Seriously, she actually said the refugees coming in are climate refugees. Now, they went to another clip, an interview on Fox News. Border Patrol Union Vice President Chris Cabrera, noting that there, in the previous 24 hours, there had been 1,924 apprehensions, said that loosening of policies, along with changes that come after any election cycle, can account for the surge. He did say it's not orchestrated by the cartels. At least he didn't try to blame it on President Trump. I'll give him that. But I'll tell you what, he did turn it into a hospitality infomercial. He started talking about the upgraded and updated facilities. And it was like a Club Med commercial for refugees. Indy Hawk KB points out, there's no crisis at the border, but let's bring in FEMA to help. Yeah, exactly. They're bringing in FEMA. They literally sent out this memo we talked about last week to ask people to volunteer to go down at the border during this crisis or during this surge. Yeah, it's insane. But yeah, he did note, though, that the change in policy is the largest contributing factor. So what do we do? Look, I'm all for being humane. I'm all for not tossing unaccompanied minors out on their own. Frankly, no matter which side of the border they are collectively tossed. I mean, it's, come on, at what point do we, the American people, stand up to this administration, illegitimate though it may be, and demand even a semblance of law and order? That's really what it boils down to. Believe it or not, we can still apply the law. Absent that, we can treat them mainly, of course. What I think is happening, though, before our very eyes, is an attempt to create de facto law. We're seeing no legislative action. Now, there is now upcoming the bills that are going to be voted on, but at this point, we'd seen no legislative action. We had seen no executive orders other than reversal of President Trump's policies. Well, those aren't executive orders. That's just reversing. So we've not seen any action from courts other than localized. But worse, though, Texas appears to be, even though Texas is pushing back at the AP Biden administration, other states are all but holding the door open in some cases, California, or at least they decriminalize illegal entry to the point of there being no deterrent to it. Now, look, I've talked about this before. I have a niece-in-law who was brought here at a very young age. She is here now. She has actually done the things that you are supposed to do. She went back to Mexico, to the American consulate or embassy, and went back and went through the whole process, did it right. She didn't have to. She could have pulled it off without doing that. But she went back and did all this the right way. And yet there are people that say, no. Let's just let people stay. Now, look, I get it. There are people that were brought here at the same age or younger. And, yeah, we need to treat that differently than somebody who came here as an adult or brought kids here as an adult. But to just simply say, amnesty, no, we can't do that. Okay, Dems, are calling on AP Biden to cancel up to $50,000 in student debt. Listen to this. They say the recent stimulus bill paves the way for it to be done through executive order and allowing it to be tax-free through 2026. New York Senator Chuck Schumer says student loan cancellation is one way to address the racial wealth gap. He said it, folks, not me. He said it, not me. Democrat Massachusetts Senator Pocahontas Warren points out unwittingly the reason they want it done by executive order. Here's what she said. She said, it is preferable to legislation because, quote, it gets done quickly and it gets done without having to go through the usual budgeting process, unquote. Okay, folks, listen carefully. This is beyond idiotic. Now, never mind that these idiots get amazingly budget conscious when it comes to national defense, immigration, anything the brain-dead media might term law and order. They constantly tell us how much it costs to maintain a prison or how much it costs to go through the death penalty process or how many poor kids we could feed if we just eliminated stupid weapons to keep our country safe. When it comes to student loan debt, we wouldn't want to go through the budgeting process. And again, we probably didn't follow a budgeting process when we started throwing around the cash in the first place. So maybe the first thing that should be done is call the public universities on the carpet to explain the amazing coincidence of increases in costs of tuition, fees, books, and whatever else that occur every time there's an increase in federal student loan funding. Literally, the more loans we hand out, the more the increases we see in greater increments every time. We see from tuition, fees, books, whatever else. Are we ever going to tell these people, DC or big media or big left, et cetera? Are we just going to tell them stop with the freewheeling entitlement spending? Look, I don't care if it's student loans or extending unemployment or welfare or bridges from nowhere to no place. We have to get them to stop. Look, unfortunately, some may not like what it's going to take to make them stop. But at some point, sooner rather than later, it's got to be done. I mean, look, we all get, I don't think anyone listening or anyone I will ever talk to would argue that something needed to be done in terms of some sort of stimulus spending, especially at the outset. But now we're just making stuff up. I mean, these people, look, forget the fact that at most 15% goes for actual COVID relief. We know about these state blue state bailouts. And, you know, we've talked about this, the things that aren't even funded until 2022 and 2024, which coincide with election cycles. Look, nobody's arguing that some sort of stimulus or some things needed to be done. Because frankly, it was government that closed our economy down in the first place. But sooner or later, folks, this has all got to be reined in. We're all going to pay for it. Look, Pocahontas took it further with this little beauty. Listen to this. Quote, figuring out the technical pieces of how to do this is not very hard. It's perfectly set up for an executive order. The president can do this, and I very much hope he will soon. Unquote. Schumer went even more brazen. He's saying it's much harder to do it legislatively, as Republicans have not jumped at the opportunity. In other words, AP Biden was selected way back when because they already knew he was incapable of serving rationally or effectively. So installing him by hook or by crook gave Big Left complete carte blanche with any pet projects or little self-serving favors they wanted, literally. I mean, that's what some of you probably already knew this. Maybe I'm a little slow and a little dense. You know, all this time I thought, well, they did it. You know, they pushed Biden because he was the one that had a chance to win. I'm thinking now, you know, he was starting to lose. He was losing grip. And then all of a sudden, Buttigieg dropped out, Harris dropped, and they all dropped out. I'm pretty convinced now that was because they knew Biden was flying headlong down the chasm. Listen, Schumer said, president could do it with a flick of a pen, but if he doesn't, we'll pursue other options. Sure you will. They literally did this because they knew they would never have done this, what they did. They would never have tried to pull it off with a Hillary. They wouldn't have tried to pull it off with any candidate who would have known what was being pulled off with the fraud and the, you know, what we saw in Time magazine with all that, such a coordinated, they never would have tried and never could have tried to pull it off with a candidate who was lucid. So that's exactly why they did do this. But if we get the word out, if we let everyone know that this is why this was done, that this wasn't an accident, Biden didn't just happen to win and he's suddenly losing it. He's been losing it for a while. And look, this is that part of it's sad. I don't want to misconstrue. I'm not laughing at his condition. And frankly, someday his wife is going to have to face someone, face other family members, face God or whoever, and say, yeah, I let them do this to my husband. And that's another matter. That's between her and whoever. But the fact of the matter is it's happening. And we're letting it happen and we're paying the price. So it's got to be us. We've got to be able to start telling our elected officials. And when they sit there and say back to you, oh, well, you know, look, let's not pull this stuff. Let's not pull punches here, Congressman or Miss Senator or Congresswoman or Mr. Senator. Tell it like it is. This man can't. I mean, it's literally March 17th of 2021. This man has not spoken in front of a press conference. He has not had a joint congressional or a State of the Union or any of that. We're not seeing his son, Hunter, anywhere. He's nowhere to be seen. All of this is going on right under our noses. Big Left and big media and big tech, all of it. Big, you know, big finance. They're all letting it happen. They're all part of it. And we're letting it happen. This is who and what we are dealing with. We have people who literally see no stumbling block, acknowledge any concept of procedures, checks and balances, or frankly, legality. It is literally a damn big left free-for-all, and it will continue unabated if we aren't willing to step forward and stop it. Now, this next one is going to warm the heart. So strategists are telling us five tax hikes that may be coming under AP Biden. These are necessary, of course, they say, because of the recent $1.9 trillion fake COVID relief bill. And an upcoming, necessary they say, infrastructure spending bill. Here's a laffy from Stifel Chief Washington Policy Strategist Brian Gardner. It's what this guy said, quote, the the politics of a tax bill are likely to be more challenging than the politics of passing an emergency spending bill. Most lawmakers like spending money and being seen as caring and empathetic during a health crisis. However, voting for a tax bill is not as popular, since it could include hard choices for key industries and political supporters back home. Given the Democrats' razor-thin majorities in both the House and Senate, any dissension could be fatal to the bill. This guy is an analyst? What the hell? How in hell are we supposed to take this guy seriously when he takes about 8 sentences to tell us a simple phrase that covers it all? Other people's money. That's it. It's literally nothing more than that. In this particular case, what they find difficult is trying to get people to pay back on whatever basis they think will not send their collective rear ends home from D.C. in the next election. They're literally trying to get us to pay back money that they just handed us. Not proportionally, mind you. They're trying to get us to pay back money that they handed us. Money that they had to hand us because of their actions over the past year. And it has been a year now. March 17th of 2020, at least in where I live, is when the local yokels shut it down. Closed restaurants and bars. They allowed carryout, basically closed them. No movie theaters, no retail, essential businesses. Home Depot was doing fine. Amazon, of course, Walmart. No local, I have a friend, a local hobby shop, no local hobby shop, no theaters. Granted, theaters tend to be conglomerate type stuff, but no theaters, no sporting events, no recreation, so to speak, no cruises, no going and staying in hotels. Mrs. Hank, who is here in the other room, she works in an industry that was heavily affected, a tourism-based industry. And look, Stifel is an investment firm that, according to the latest figures, has about $357 billion in assets under their management. Its global headquarters, it's in St. Louis. Go figure. Everything I read, though, points to a legit firm with little or no issues in the scandal front, other than the 5 Wisconsin school districts losing $200 million in an investment that was designed to protect their pension funds. The SEC, no, not the athletic conference, the actual SEC, the one that protects some but not all financial crooks, they went after them, but in concert with the clients, Stifel went after Royal Bank of Canada, alleging they were liable for their misrepresentation of the investments. Apparently, RBC settled with the SEC for $30.4 million, while Stifel et al. Are still chasing RBC. So anywho, this clown says politicians like spending money more than they like raising it, be it through taxes or graft or blackmail or favors or whatever. That's not a shock, folks. Having done a couple charity fundraisers myself, I can tell you raising it from others is not the easiest part. However, let me tell you something. Spending it ain't easy either if you don't actually raise it. You can't really do a big cardboard check to Little Sisters of the Destitute if you aren't going to give them a real check. I mean, I guess you could, but without that real check, the photo op with a big cardboard check can crash real quick, like be a public relations nightmare. Yeah. So yeah, of course politicians enjoy spending money more than they like raising it. This guy, this is what I feel like when I read and hear this stuff. It takes me back to movie lines. Now, Brother Tommy and I talk in movie lines all the time. Here's a movie that this stuff literally just made me think of this movie scene. Here we go. It's the rage portion. Listen to this.
So why don't we dive right in by interpreting one of the easiest events in the last 20 years of American history. Now, can someone tell me why in 1975 we pulled our troops out of Vietnam?
The failure of Vietnam invasion to win popular support caused an ongoing erosion of confidence in the various American but illegal Saigon regimes.
Is she right? because I know that's the popular version of what went on there. I know a lot of people like to believe that. I wish I could, but I was there. I wasn't here in the classroom, hoping I was right, thinking about it. I was up on my knees in rice paddies with guns and N-word going up against Charlie, slugging it out with him while pussies like you were back there partying, putting headbands on, doing drugs, listening to the goddamn Beatle album.
Hey, Professor, take it easy, will you? I mean, these kids, they were in grade school at the time. And me, I'm not a fighter. I'm a lover.
Well, I didn't know you wanted to get involved with the discussion, Mr. Helper. But since you want to help, maybe you can help me, okay? You remember that thing we had about 30 years ago called that Korean conflict? Yeah, where we failed to achieve victory. How come we didn't cross the 38th parallel and push those rice eaters back to the Great Wall of China and take the first brick and nuke them back into the fucking Stone Age River? How come? Tell me why. Say it. Say it.
All right. I'll say it. Because Truman was too much of a pussy wimp to let MacArthur go in there and blow out those commie bastards.
Good answer. Good answer. I like the way you think. I'm going to be watching you.
Good teacher. He really seems to care. About what, I have no idea.
So, that is the inimitable, the late Sam Kinison from the movie Back to School. That's what I'm thinking. That's how I'm feeling as I read some of this stuff. I mean, it's like they're literally just playing Monopoly with our lives. I mean, anyway, so without further ado, anyway, here are the five tax hikes Stiefel's Brian Gardner believes might come to pass, quote, under the political climate. Number one, raising the corporate income tax from 21 to 28%. Number two, doubling the global intangible low-taxed income rate from 10.5 to 21%. When I say global, I don't mean worldwide. I mean the low-taxed income rate, the minimum, raising that from 10.5 to 21%. Number three, lift the top tax rate for individuals making $400,000+ per year from 37 to 39.6%. Number four, taxing capital gains as ordinary income, you know, the top rate of 39.6% for those earning $1+ million per year. And five, raising the estate tax from 40 to 45% for assets over 1 million. In other words, these people are so disgusting, they'll increase taxes on dead people. That's what we are literally dealing with. Yeah, let's go after the estate tax. Look, it might pay for some infrastructure, but you know what? We're going to have less businesses around to pay the increased corporate tax rate. We're certainly going to have less average Americans enjoying the wonderful new infrastructure in any way, because they won't have jobs. I mean, good Lord, do these people understand anything about basic economics? I mean, anything at all? Okay, let's get Dr. Deborah Birx, Mrs. Ascot, if you will. She says she still thinks about the moment last year when President Trump, inserting a key word here, allegedly raised the issue of injecting people with disinfectant to combat COVID-19. The COVID response coordinator at the time, Birx, says, quote, frankly, I didn't know how to handle that episode, unquote. Friends, that right there explains why COVID-19 went on that little rampage. Seriously, whether or not he said it, and I doubt very much that he did, at least in that context, think about their roles. President Trump, as leader of the country, is looking at anything and everything possible to stem the pandemic. So what should Dr. Birx have done? First of all, as a, quote, doctor, she sure as hell should have known how to, quote, handle it. That's her job. It's her profession. Presumably, it's her area of expertise. Her job was to advise and coordinate, not wait around to criticize President Trump in the media. Maybe that's our damn problem. We have people working, ostensibly, on behalf of our country who aren't even loyal to our country, or they're only loyal to certain segments of the country. Oh, yeah, we hire them. We pay them to serve, or we elect the people who hire them to serve, and we pay the damn people. Burks actually said she and Fauci talked all the time about, quote, how to correct the record, unquote. Hey, Vito. Vito's in the chat room, folks. You know, newsflash, what record, Dr. Burks? You and Fauci each had one job. You both botched your jobs. Now all of us are paying for it. Well, of course, you and Fauci continue to waffle on a daily basis, hell, practically on an hourly basis, about what's safe, what's not, who can gather and who can't, and how many masks one should be able to fit over one's head. You know, it's sort of comforting to know Burks isn't getting paid anymore. In fact, it's somewhat ironic that she was willing to stay on in the AP Biden-Harris administration, but she wasn't chosen to stay on. She left this gem, though, at the end of the interview, quote, whether it's the CDC director or Dr. Fauci or President Biden or Vice President Harris, all of them and all of their spokespeople are communicating exactly the same pieces. And I think it is critically important, end quote. Huh? These people aren't communicating anything coherently. They can't get their story straight. They can't get their dates in line, or their advisories about continued masks or social distancing or gatherings. Hell, these people can't even decide to tell the truth and call the virus what it is or its origins. They won't even broach the possibility that it was engineered. And they go to great pains to blame the U.S. and absolve everyone else on this planet. They can't admit their prior behavior, like, you know, when they call President Trump racist and xenophobic. And they excuse everything from Pelosi telling folks everything is fine, so come to Chinatown, to Fauci telling us, by the way, in March of 2020, that America didn't need to wear masks. Worse, you know, when those things are pointed out, we're told the virus was ever-evolving. Somehow it wasn't ever-evolving when President Trump instituted the initial travel ban and subsequent bans. It wasn't ever-evolving when spring breakers and partygoers were castigated by big media while big left dictators ignored their own mandates. It wasn't ever-evolving when President Trump instituted Operation Warp Speed to bring a vaccine in less than a year. No, to them, now it's Biden that got the vaccine, and poor Biden is cleaning up a mess, whether it's COVID, the border crisis, or anything else. That's it. Folks, I am done with politics for today. My stomach simply cannot take more of it. So on to sports. Hi, like I said before, I wanted to welcome Banjo 80 and Indie Hawk KB to the chat room, and Vito has joined us as well. We got Mike, Sue, and looks like T. Bodie's on the phone line, and we've got Brother Tommy as well. So let's get to sports news. Archie Miller is out after four seasons at Indiana as their coach. He went 67-58 overall, 33-44 in the Big Ten, including, by the way, a sweep of Iowa this season. In fact, you know, given recent history, Iowa seems to determine a guy's longevity, win or lose. At Nebraska, Bo Pelini beat us, and he got fired because they had to reevaluate where we were as a program. So Bo Pelini got fired. Mike Riley lost to us woefully, and he got fired. At Indiana, Archie Miller beat us and got fired. Mike Davis lost to us and got fired. In Archie Miller's case, he's getting a $10-plus million buyout. The only year that he would have made the NCAA tournament was last year when there was no NCAA tournament. As I said, his Big Ten record was 33-44, but the number that mattered most, folks, was his 0-7 record against Purdue. Indy Hawk points out they're begging for Brad Stevens. Brad Stevens says it's flattering, but not going to happen. Out of his 75-week tenure, now this is in season only, of course. He was there 4 years, but he spent 75 weeks as an active coach, so to speak. He spent only six of those weeks in the AP Top 25. His highest ranking while he was there was 21st. They never won more than two consecutive games. They were 12-23 against the AP Top 25 and only 3-9 in their games after beating those 12-ranked opponents. Under him, the Hoosiers never had a winning record in conference play. They averaged finishing between 8th and 9th in the regular season. He did sign three of the last four Indiana Mr. Basketball winners, however, missing the last five NCAA tournaments. even counting last year's asterisks, that's not going to do much for job security as Indiana University's head basketball coach. Just saying. Okay, so who's next? Indy Hawk mentions Brad Stevens. That's not going to happen, but one name that gets mentioned every time that job opens up, and let's face it, since Bob Knight got fired, they've had a lot of these openings. One name that comes up is Steve Alford. Now, we'll go into this. He was on Indiana's last national championship team under Knight in 1987. He took Southwest Missouri State to the Sweet 16 in 1999. And he parlayed that into the Iowa job, at which he promptly underwhelmed and quasi-disgraced with his handling of the Pierre Pierce sexual assault situation. He had moderate success at New Mexico in the Mountain West. He parlayed that into the UCLA job. Actually had several good seasons there before things went south. He's now back in the Mountain West at Nevada. Word is he has never been near the top of any of the lists when the Indiana job came open. He's exhibited a tendency to throw his players under the bus after losses, as Iowa fans can well attest. He left Iowa basically while he could. He even preserved a slight amount of dignity. He left, with a slight amount of dignity. He left UCLA, though, 3 days after signing a 10-year extension in New Mexico. My guess is there are 13 teams in the Big Ten hoping that the Hoosiers pull the trigger on Steve Alford. Unfortunately, the one school that matters is Indiana, so I don't see it happening. Right now, he's 34-21 at Nevada. But you know what? That's not, you know, that's after a stretch of 110-34 under the previous 4 years under Arkansas coach Eric Musselman. Under Musselman, Nevada won a CBI title and had three consecutive NCAA appearances, a Sweet 16 run. You'll remember the Loyola team of 2017 and 18. That's who ended Nevada's run. So, yeah, I don't see Indiana going the Steve Alford route, but I sure won't be upset if they do. By the way, Archie Miller is the brother of Arizona coach Sean Miller. Talked about him on the show with Vito, my very first show. Despite FBI wiretaps and whatnot, Sean Miller is somehow still the head coach in Arizona. Matter of perspective, I guess. Meanwhile, Minnesota coach Richard Pitino, he interviewed at New Mexico over the weekend, which I assume was in anticipation of him being fired at Minnesota. And he was. He had an overall record of 147-123, but he was 54-96 in the Big Ten. He had a first and a second round exit in the NCAA. He won an NIT championship his first year, but his last 2 years were not good. They were staying home last year as well, even though it was a COVID year, they were staying home. But Minnesota, they made it official. Minnesota made it official. They fired him. And then no sooner, by the end of yesterday, he was hired as the new head coach at New Mexico. They had parted ways with Paul Weir after four seasons. Guess what? Pitino, his wife, and his family say they are thrilled. I got to say, really, most coaches don't have it that easy. Most wait a year, maybe get an assistant gig. In this case, it had been barely 24 hours before he caught another head coaching job. So more power to him. I'm pretty sure it won't be Big Ten type money. And evidently any job he gets cancels out his buyout from Minnesota. Still not bad. And he's actually a pretty nice guy by all accounts. So it's nice that he has another job, frankly. I mean, he could do well there. He can establish relationships quickly. I mean, I don't see him as a bad guy. Speaking of, as I mentioned, the NIT, Colorado State is the top seed in this year's 16-team version of the NIT. Louisville begged out of the tourney. And Belmont, 26-4 Belmont, did not even get in. They won their conference's regular season title, but lost in their conference tournament. That kind of sucks. Then again, losing by 15 in the championship game of the Ohio Valley Conference rarely gets an at-large bid. Belmont, along with three other teams, are on standby for the NIT if any team can't participate. Now, last night was the deadline for NCAA teams to cancel out. None did at this point. Doesn't mean more won't, but in addition to Louisville, which begged off, Seton Hall, St. John's, Xavier, and Duke opted out of the NIT. This year, rather than campus sites, and then for the semis and the finals at Madison Square Garden, all games take place in Frisco and Denton, Texas. Yeah, nothing like going all out, huh? Wow, son, sure, it's the NIT, but maybe I'll still get to play in Madison Square Garden. No, Dad, this year it's in Frisco and Denton, Texas. Yeah, well, son, what channel's that on again? Yeah, not a banner year for the NIT. Final rankings are in, but since they're meaningless, now that the NCAA brackets are out, we won't really discuss them. We also won't discuss the fact that of the Power Six conference tournaments I predicted, I nailed exactly one, the Big Ten, and that was only because I said Iowa or Illinois. I did have FSU winning the ACC, and at least they made the final. I was wrong in the Big 12, the Big East, the SEC, the Pac-12. None of the teams I picked in those conference tournaments even made the finals, except for Illinois and Florida State. So, no, I will not be giving NCAA tournament bracket advice anytime soon. Yeah, I never give bracket advice about the NIT, ever. By the way, more firings. Monday, Iowa State fired head coach Steve Prohm. That one's easily understandable. He was 2-22 this year. Last year he was 12-20. He hasn't beaten Iowa since 2017. He hasn't finished higher than fifth in the Big 12 regular season. He has an overall record of 97-95. He's 40-68 in conference. Like the aforementioned Steve Alford, while at Iowa, Prohm did win two Big 12 tournaments. They made the NCAA tournament in three of his six seasons. His first season, they had a Sweet 16 run, meaning he took Fred Hoiberg's recruits to the Sweet 16. Word is UNLV coach TJ Otzelberger is the favorite to get the job. Now you're thinking the 28-29 at UNLV, TJ Otzelberger, evidently his previous success at South Dakota State is too rich to pass up. Actually, he did have three previous assistant gigs at ISU. He was an assistant under Greg McDermott, then Fred Hoiberg, then Steve Prohm. He knows the program. Now, I don't personally see it as a dazzling hire, but if I had to guess, I'd say it's about keeping as much of that roster intact as possible. He is supposed to be a good recruiter, and he probably has familiarity with most of the players that are still on that roster. So we'll see. It's not a flashy hire per se, but it would appear there's some logic behind it. Meanwhile, over in Iowa City, the Hawkeyes have extended the coach, Fran McCaffrey, his contract through 2028. Bodes well for stability, but frankly, we need to see success in this year's NCAA tournament. All-American player of the year, Luca Garza, is gone, as is Jordan Bohannon. They're gone for sure. Word is that Joe Wieskamp is also going to declare for the NBA draft, which has made more sense as the season has unfolded. I got to say, he may not be star material, but another year in Iowa City really isn't going to increase his draftability. There's still a decent nucleus. C.J. Frederick, Connor and Patrick McCaffrey, Keegan and Chris Murray, Joe Toussaint, hopefully a returning Jack Nunge. They'll need to be development with Josh Ogundele, Anthony Perkins, and Aaron Ulis, but we need maybe, I'm thinking, a transfer or grad transfer player in the post. Jack Nunge plays as much facing the basket as he does with his back to it. But Josh Ogundele is big and he's powerful, but he's raw. Over in Pennsylvania, Penn State hired Purdue assistant Micah Shrewsbury as its next coach. He replaces Jim Ferry. Jim Ferry, remember, is the interim he took over when Pat Chambers resigned in October over, quote, inappropriate conduct investigation. He's coached at both college and pro levels, Micah Shrewsbury. He's worked under Matt Painter. He's worked under Brad Stevens at Butler. He's helped lead them to the back-to-back NCAA title game appearances. I think it's a good hire. NCAA transfer portal is going to start filling up in a few weeks. I don't care what team you support, what you think of the portal, or whether or not your guy declares for the draft. The portal is something we're going to have to get used to, folks. To sort of recap, a player can place his or her name in the NCAA transfer portal. Now, at that point, other schools can have unlimited, unrestricted contact with the player. The player's current school can release them from team activities. They can limit their scholarship to tuition only for the remainder of the semester. There have been cases where a player remains with the team through the season and even ends up staying permanently. Other cases have seen players leave the team, or in some cases the school, during the season. It's truly case by case. Now, the problem with that could become this. Players could use the portal as a bargaining tool. Now, conversely, schools could use names in the portal as leverage against existing players. So, especially if they place their name in the portal. Look, example, okay. Joe Schmo at Eddytown College places his name in the portal. His coach, recognizing that small forwards like Joe Schmo are a dime a dozen, he throws around a couple names he sees while viewing the portal. Maybe he puts out the word that Schmo isn't a team player. Or Schmo sees that Bill Bullethead enters the portal. Bullethead's a small forward at Anywhere Tech. Schmo already knows that coach, so he drops hints that Tech's coach is offering him a dream experience at Anywhere Tech. But, of course, he could be convinced to stay at Anywhere College. You know what I'm saying? That's the what I see the drawbacks of the portal. In other words, look, the more stuff we see like transfer portals, the more stuff we see like allowing some form of players making outside money, and certainly the more stuff we see of government involvement on top of it all, the more the NCAA is going to look like the NFL and the NBA. And then probably what I see, we'll see leagues and teams forming that pay players right out of high school, probably, but place them in some sort of modified college format, teaching them basic life skills or whatever, but skipping the Shakespeare and the Camel Lab. Look, once the Cory Bookers and the Chuck Schumers and the Mitch McConnells get involved, yeah, the more we're going to relish the good old days. Sorry, that's just fact. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. The reason we're going to take a quick break, after the break, we're bringing in Hawkeye Mike, Indy Hawk KB, and Brother Tommy, if he pops the one on his phone. So, yeah, we're gonna take a quick break, and then we're going to come back. We're going to talk basketball and the brackets. And in the meantime, I'm going to treat you all to a little bit of Jeff Beck. Be right back, folks. Okay, we are back. I'm going to bring on the line. First, I'm going to bring in Indy Hawk KB. Indy Hawk, you there?
Yes, I'm here. How are you doing, Hank?
Good. How are you, sir? Good to have you
doing
on.
Doing well.
First timer on the show. Thank you for being here. Like I said, in lieu of Poly Sports tonight, we're talking NCAA tournament. 68 teams have been chosen. First four games go tomorrow night. Thank you for being here, sir. Next, I'm going to bring in Hawkeye Mike. You on there?
I'm here, Hank. How's it going?
Good. How you doing, sir?
Pretty good. Pretty good. How's it going, Indy Hawk?
Doing well. How you doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Hey, we got Brother Tommy on the line. Brother Tommy, how you doing?
Great.
Okay.
How y'all?
Okay. So here's the weird part. The first four games are going Thursday. Usually it used to be a Tuesday, Wednesday, and then first round, or whatever you want to call it, 64, is going Friday, Saturday, and then Sunday, Monday for the next round. That's weird. So we'll go run through the regions briefly. We'll give our choices and all that kind of stuff.
We'll call 64
Friday, Saturday.
Here's a question I have. Okay, this is the first NCAA tournament since 1976 that didn't have Duke or Kentucky in the field. Weird, right? Okay, now, that's also coincidentally a team entered the tournament undefeated and finished as the undefeated winner, which was Indiana, okay? Gonzaga's got a chance this year. I think several teams can give them a game, though. But, you know, it's just kind of interesting. You know, we've sat through the Lute Olson years and the George Raveling years and the Tom Davis years. We've suffered the flameouts. We've suffered, you know, we suffered the agony of 1987. So anyway, Andy Hawk, I'll start with you. First, thanks for coming on. Any matchups in this first round or so that jump out at you?
Yeah, there's some. Creighton, UCSB.
Yeah.
Virginia is coming off of COVID. They're the four. Ohio's the 13. Ohio's got a dude named Jason Preston that everybody's talking a lot about, and Ohio came within two of Illinois earlier this year. So I've got them beating Virginia. That's my big upset.
Okay. Okay. Mike, how about you? Anything jumping at you?
Well, yeah, you know, one of the things I think will be a good first-round game is I like Wisconsin, North Carolina in the South region. I know North Carolina's been a little bit iffy this year, but they're both in 8-9. Winner will take Baylor on in the next game. I think Baylor is vulnerable, so I think the winner of that Wisconsin-North Carolina game could make a little bit of a run. Also, I kind of like this one of the first four-in games, Michigan State and UCLA. I think Michigan State might be poised to make a little bit of a run, too. It's kind of a pick I have. So like those two games. And, of course, tomorrow night some people from Iowa, I know Indy Hawk might want to check this out, is the Drake-Wichita State game. We'll see if Drake can do any damage in the tournament.
Yeah, I don't know. How did you figure them as a play-in? I think, you know, I know that they've talked about that conference isn't the best word, but Drake has had a great year. They were on the
25-4.
But they were on the edge of it. All year they were talking like, will they get in? Will they get in? I mean, that's just, I don't know. Brother Tommy, what are you seeing?
All right, I'm going to show you all four real quick. And Hank knows because he's been to the track with me. When I go big. So this is a couple of these going to sound crazy, but bear with me. In the West, I got 4-seed Virginia beating Gonzaga, which is the 1-seed. Everyone likes Gonzaga. I do too, but the problem is you haven't lost yet. You're going to, when you see the defense of Virginia, you're going to kind of get a little flustered. The other one I have there is 6-seed USC beating 3-seed Kansas in the second round. Now, if I go East, I got 4-seed Florida State beating 1-seed Michigan. 10-seed Maryland beating 2-seed Alabama. Like I said, I'm swinging for the fences here, and this is where you get the money when you're in Vegas. In the South, third round, I've got Purdue beating aforementioned Baylor, a 4-seed beating the 1-seed Baylor. That's not my biggest upset. You guys are going to laugh at this one, but I'll indulge you. Biggest upset of the tournament, 8-seed Loyola beating 1-seed Illinois in the second round. The other one I've got in the Midwest is I've got 6-seed San Diego State beating 3-seed West Virginia in the second round. Real quick, final four I have in the West, either Virginia or USC. In the East, I have Florida State. In the South, I have Ohio State or Purdue. In the West, I have Houston. I have Houston winning it all. Sorry, Big Ten fans, but
okay, I'm going
to
give Indy and Mike time to take to get their laughing out of their system now with those picks, but
you'll see. Well, you know, one thing about that, actually, I kind of like that pick about Loyola. I do think they're a tough team, and Illinois, that's going to be a second-round game. That could be a real toughie. The question I have is Virginia, do we know they're going to be a go? I mean, aren't they having some big COVID issues? I think I read today they're not even going to show up till Friday, and which makes me wonder if they're trying to hang on. but they could end up screwing, you know, one of these teams that's in the weight position, and then
they
can't
cannot,
go,
they cannot show up. Mike,
really
Mike, to answer that, they cannot show up till Friday. That's the earliest they can show up by their quarantine rule.
Okay.
So, yeah, my premise with that was all things being equal, and my Illinois is one of two things, and I'm betting on the latter. One thing with Illinois is they are playing better than anyone in the country. Now, the following statement is going to sound a little ludicrous to you guys, so the proof's going to be in the pudding if they do lose. I think, and I got a buddy that graduated from Illinois. He totally disagrees with me. I think Illinois might have peaked too early. Beating Michigan, beating Ohio State, winning their first round in the I just think they might have peaked a trifle too early. Winning the whole thing in the Big Ten tourney. And I'll probably be proven a fool on that, but that's my premise. And as Hawkeye Mike pointed out, a couple of years ago, remember Loyola had that run, and they've got that nun on their side. So, you know, we got divine intervention, you know. So that's my only thing with Illinois. I just think they might have peaked early. And if they didn't, I think they're the best team in the tournament, personally. But I'm just, you know, you don't win money at Vegas by betting the 1-5 favorite.
Yeah,
I like the Loyola pick.
Indy Hawk, so Indy Hawk, I wanted your thought because we've and Mike's been around too. Mike mentioned it, but what do you think of that Michigan State UCLA in a first four? Is that like a fool's gold pick? I mean, you've seen enough of Michigan State, I assume, to think. I mean, do you think that's gonna?
Yeah,
is that a disrespect game for both of those programs, or is that just a matter of that's where they landed?
Yeah, I don't know. You can go both ways on that because Michigan State just looked really bad, but they've beaten a lot of good teams early on. So you can never rule Izzo out, but I didn't take them very far.
Yeah.
They also beat Illinois late on, Michigan State did, after Iowa trounced them.
That's right.
Beat the crap out of Illinois.
Yeah, I think they might get to the Sweet 16, I'm thinking, but I don't think they go beyond that. But I do think they might make a little bit of a run. I think they get by UCLA, and you know, then we'll see what happens, I guess. But yeah, they've been kind of inconsistent this year. I do think Izzo will have them ready.
I agree with that. There is Izzo factor. Yep. All right, go ahead.
Mike, you think Drake's underseeded?
A little bit. I think they should have got in on their own, you know, but they probably would have been a 14-15 seed, I think two of their four losses are to Loyola, right? And I think Loyola is pretty darn good. So you know, we'll see. If they get by Wichita State, they could be dangerous. Yeah.
And since you're out in Colorado, how good? I mean, Colorado's a 5 seed. How good are they?
I guess part of my problem is I think they're not a bad team, but. I have some Pac-12 issues. I just don't think it's a strong conference. I think Oregon may not be too bad, but they didn't do very well in the Pac-12 tournament. We'll see. Iowa actually could face them in the second round. But I know somebody said that they thought, oh, that's a team to watch. You know, look, we're in the NCAA. You don't want to take any team lightly. But I don't know. I just think the Pac-12 is just been down this year, so. We'll see how it goes.
Indy Hawk, you're in Indianapolis area or in Indiana. Purdue, obviously, is a home state school. You think this makes a big difference for them since they're literally not traveling? I mean, you know,
it's
going to help them.
I think there is a sleeper to come out of there. I think they'll give Baylor a good run. I want to touch on Sister Jean at Loyola. That's why I like that pick. She's 101 years old, and she's throwing shade on Duke and Kentucky. She had a comment. It doesn't look like the teams are in there that are usually in there. She's going to have that team, Jeff. That'll be a fun one against Illinois. And the Colorado-Georgetown, that's an interesting matchup because I think about 50% of people are taking Georgetown in that, so that's likely to upset anger Colorado. So I went with Colorado on that one.
Yeah, I think Georgetown, you know, they hit lightning with that Big East tournament. One, they had the chip of Pat Ewing, being dissed when they went into Madison Square Garden. And then you had, a Villanova team that, frankly, nobody's talking about them because they're down their two best guards. I mean, they're a four or five seed, but they're not going anywhere. I mean, nobody's got them going anywhere, and I don't think they are going anywhere. I just think, Georgetown really comes in this one game over 500. I mean, it's hard for me to look and see Georgetown going anywhere, so that's just kind of,
I took UCSB over Creighton because Georgetown beat Creighton by 25 in the conference championship.
And Creighton had their own issues, that McDermott with his racial stuff a couple weeks ago, and then they made a run once they got back, from his suspension or whatever, they made a bit of a run until they ran up against Georgetown. But I just don't. Big East, I think, is a really, it's hard to see certain conferences not doing well. I mean, it's hard to see the Big Ten not having, at least two to four teams playing in the regional finals. I mean, of the nine Big Ten teams that are, let's put it this way, of the five Big Ten teams that are not in, those are the ones that have losing records. They wouldn't have been in the NIT or anything like that. But you have nine Big Ten teams in, and frankly, every one of them can make some noise of some sort, I mean, I think Rutgers is and Rutgers, Brother Tommy already talked about Maryland, but I think both Rutgers and Maryland have that Big Ten physicality plus the talent. I think they can, they can give most of these other conferences.
What about Wisconsin too? What about Wisconsin? They get by North Carolina, they'll get Baylor. I think they can pull the upset there. I think Wisconsin's a potential upset pick there to get maybe to the Sweet 16.
I don't think they have firepower. I don't think Wisconsin's got the firepower.
I agree on Wisconsin. I looked at the KenPom. They're 10 on KenPom. Sagarin, they're 13, but yet they're the 35th on the committee. So
yeah.
Well, the other thing, Baylor is not exactly, Baylor came off their COVID and then they finally lost a game to Kansas. And yet not many people are giving Kansas any kind of a shot anyway. And frankly, they didn't lose by much to Oklahoma State, but Oklahoma State's being talked about a bit. And
right.
They
now,
they're going
to
lose.
Watch too. Oklahoma State is tough, I think.
Yeah, I think I agree. Cade Cunningham is mainly people are talking about. He is Kentucky. They're thinking now he's going to be the number one pick in the draft. So, for what that's worth.
And he's a freshman, right?
Yep. So guys, let's get right to this part. We all saw it on our text. Tim Doyle has made his pick, and he's got Houston in it, like Brother Tommy talked about. But he's also got our Hawkeyes in there. He's got our Hawkeyes playing Houston in the national championship. Is this kiss of death?
Well, this is Tommy talking. I just saw too many troubling things with Iowa, and by that I mean, and I think I've talked to this with you mano a mano, Hank. I just don't see them all firing at the same time. If they all fire at the same time, Frederick, Wieskamp, Bohannon. Yeah, we got a chance to go all the way, but they never do. Hank, you pointed out they do, but in the irrelevant games. Otherwise, they don't. Garza, he can do whatever the hell he wants. I don't care if we go to the national championship and he doesn't score a point in the whole series. He's proven his weight. But the other ones, in my world anyways, haven't. You said something that I think is laughable. Wieskamp, if you think he can go pro this year, you're out of your mind. He's got
I don't think he's necessarily going to be a great pro. I just don't think him staying in Iowa City an extra year does anything for him. I really don't.
Well, what's the alternative? What's the alternative? I don't even think he makes G League right now. So what's the alternative? Play another year of basketball on the university. And I think he actually does have room for improvement. He needs Garza's dad to work on him on things like other things like that. So, and I'm not even kidding.
Well, right. No,
Garza's
I think that's a good
totally
point.
Responsible for Garza.
I think that's a good point. Yep. If Garza gone next year, if he came back, he would have a chance to really feature maybe.
Absolutely.
And that might help. That might help his NBA stock,
Absolutely.
But I do agree with Hank that I do think it's more likely than not that he's going to go pro. But you know, maybe he'll gauge like Garza did last year and decide, you know, he's better off coming back. But we'll see.
I just don't think at the Grand Canyon team.
What?
Did you guys
Andy,
look at Grand Canyon?
Yeah,
Grand Canyon,
I have a little.
When we take the floor against Grand Canyon, it's going to look like a varsity against the JV. And they're all Europeans.
Yeah.
Italy, Denmark, 7 foot 270, 6'10", 235. They both start, and they're their top two scorers. And they're really good at getting teams in foul trouble. This could get ugly if Garza gets in foul trouble. I don't even know who we bring in. I guess Ogden Darling or...
That's my
one knock I will say on Garza is he will not get in foul trouble, and Hank and I have talked about this, because he doesn't play defense. Sorry, guys.
You got
the only knock I will do on Garza, he is my favorite player of Iowa history, but the guy does not play defense. He lets those guys back him into the 2 foot line, and then he just puts his hands up. And so I don't see him getting in foul trouble.
Go ahead, Andy.
And I know that's probably from McCaffrey saying, hey, listen, give him the bucket. We do not want you to get in foul trouble. So maybe it's not his fault. But I saw so much during the Wisconsin game and the Illinois game. I'm just like, come on, man. You got to play. Not him. He's probably instructed to do it, but he does not play. Sorry.
Andy, you had a cut on that.
Yeah, I agree completely with what Tommy said there. I mean, they're going to go at him all day. I mean, you got 10 fouls to give. They're your top two players. It's going to be hard not to. And those, they're one of the best teams in the country at getting people in foul trouble, drawing fouls. So, and I don't even know what we do if he gets in trouble. And that he does do that. He backs away. What if he does that in this game? Jeez, they'll eat him up.
Well, you know,
that's
what you need to this game, I think the key as it's going to be to how Iowa does, you know, if they make a deep run or not, and is I think this is the critical issue, is perimeter play. They've got to have Frederick, Wieskamp, and Bohannon playing consistently, you know, playing consistently from the perimeter. Because if it's all on Garza, that's when Iowa can't win the big games, and that's when Iowa's lost the big games. And if these guys are on, and they need to be, I mean, you know, the time is now. Then they can really go far. But that's the big question mark in my mind. That's a big question mark about Iowa all year, to me.
Agreed 100% on that. Yep.
So I'm going to take a little bit of a diversion here. It's still a basketball question, but Indy, you mentioned it in the chat room. Well, what is the latest? Where do you think Indiana's going? Do you really think it's Brad Stevens or?
No, it's just crazy here. It reminds me when Lute Olson left Iowa. I mean, there's people saying, Brad Stevens was meeting with a realtor last week. You know, all this stuff. It's just crazy. Yeah, I got to believe he's not coming here. I mean,
yeah, they tracked his flight. That's what Iowa always would do with Coach. Oh, they tracked his flight. Come on.
Yeah.
So what other names
remember
are
the
forms?
You'd read that? Oh, my God. Krzyzewski's flying to Iowa City. It's like, oh, he's not. Come on, guys.
So, Andy, what other names are out there?
I've not heard much. The media here is really focused on Brad Stevens. And here's the problem with Indiana. They want an Indiana guy, play Indiana style. I don't know if you've ever been to Assembly Hall, but it's not, you know, it's kind of an eyesore when you get in there. I mean, these kids are – Indiana was good. The last time Indiana was really good was when a recruit's dad was in college. So they don't care about, you know, they're all big into the history and all that. They think, oh, you got to have an Indiana-type kid, that kind of Bobby Knight mentality. I'm like, okay.
They're sort of the Nebraska of basketball, that we were saying.
Exactly.
Indiana.
Yep.
Delusions of grandeur still dancing in their heads.
It's one of the top programs in the country. Well, not in the last 30, 40 years.
Nebraska. Perfect
they were
analogy.
In the national title game in 2002. I don't think they've been – I mean, I don't even know if they've been in the Final Four since. I know they – 2002, they were in the national title game against Maryland, ironically, when Maryland was still in the ACC. But since then, have
was
they –
Was that
have
Davis
they,
or Knight? Was
no,
that Davis or
Knight? That was Davis.
Yeah, okay.
So did they win?
Have they,
I thought their last
title
was.
No, they lost them. They lost to Maryland. But I mean, have they even been back to the Final Four since then? I mean, have they? I can't even remember any really good Indiana team since then. So how about what's the mood around? I mean, is everybody freaking out? Not freaking out. Is it really? What's the atmosphere since all the games are going to be played there? Is it a cool type atmosphere, or is it just kind of humdrum?
It is. It's a little drowned out with COVID. I mean, Indianapolis, it's just a phenomenal sports town. All downtown is connected. You've got the facilities. So it's going to be really a nice showcase for Indianapolis. I know, usually the media guys love to come to Indianapolis because everything's connected. Hotels, it's all the convention center downtown.
Main Elmo or something.
Steakhouse.
Always the same 10 steakhouses in the country.
Yep.
Yeah.
And what's the you say you got Purdue as a they're a four, right? Or are they a three?
Four.
They're a four. And so I don't remember. I really don't even remember that much about Iowa's game with them. I mean, we beat them pretty easily. I mean, it was not a, it wasn't like a five. I mean, it wasn't like a 15-point game, if I remember.
Yeah,
So I mean, they were playing very well. They actually kind of blew their game against Ohio State in the Big Ten tournament. But I'm one of those guys that there's no middle ground. Either it's all about recency bias, like how did a team do in its tournament, or it has nothing to do with how a team did in its tournament. There's no middle ground. I mean, like a team that gets to the semifinals or the finals and doesn't win their tournament, it's almost like they get forgotten. But, there are a lot – I mean, there are some good teams out there. I mean, I don't know about Florida. I had them winning the SEC, and I thought they were really poised. But, Brother Tommy, you've seen them more than I have. Florida, what has happened to them? I mean, they had some promise there. Do you think that losing that kid early in the season has been a major impact?
I'll tell you what I said about Patino in Minnesota, Junior. I saw him 1 year, and I said he's going to be the next superstar coach. Well, I was proven wrong. About 4 years ago, I said Mike White, who coaches the Florida Gators, is going to be the next superstar coach. I'm not sure I've been proven wrong there. But when I watch Florida this year, I'm not impressed. The guys don't know. Your audience doesn't know. I've got three boys that they've either been to or are going to University of Florida. My wife insists on watching them. I'm not impressed. If they get knocked out first round, what are they, a seven? So they'd be playing a 10. I don't even know who they're playing. I would not be surprised. To me, the prognosis on UF is not good. And I hope, like Iowa, I hope I'm proven wrong because they're my second favorite team because my boys go there. But now, I just got to say, I'm not impressed with them. I'm not.
Yeah, They got Virginia Tech in their first game. Here's the other thing, though. Why did we even have a regional format in this? Why didn't they just – I mean, literally – I know they're trying to preserve some tradition, but to me, looking at it, I mean, like, even the last couple tournaments, you've had it where, like, there could, as an example, if Salt Lake City is a site, you literally can have two first-round West games there and two first-round South region games there. You know what I mean? They've tried to do that a little bit. I would have thought they would have just tried to do something, I don't know, to mix it up a bit since it's all there anyway. I mean, maybe doing all the first four games tomorrow rather than splitting it two and two, I think that's kind of cool. You know, I mean.
My argument would be the most simple politics, and I'll leave it at that. I don't think the NCAA is not one of the most political institutions in the country.
Oh, sure.
They fell into the COVID trap, so that's why they're not having it in specific regions. So it's a shame, but it's just what it is.
Now, Vito in the chat room says Georgetown's overrated. I think
who's overrated?
Vito in the chat room says Georgetown is overrated.
I actually agree with that. They wouldn't be anywhere near the NCAA if they hadn't just kind of I think Indy Hawk said caught some lightning in a bottle or was that Tom? That's what happened, I mean, How does Creighton lose to those guys? I don't get it.
Yeah.
I don't understand how Michigan State got in other than the Izzo factor. Sorry. I know it's Big Ten, and I'm supposed to be their rah-rah guys, but I've seen Michigan State play like 5 times this year, and they didn't impress me 1 time. Obviously, they beat Illinois. I didn't see that game, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to run down the regionals now, regional by regional. Indy, I'll start with you. We'll start with the Friday games or the brackets that go on Friday. So if you're on the gun right now, pick 2 teams for the South Regional Final. Who would you go with?
For the South Regional Final, I have Baylor and Ohio State.
Okay, so you're going chalk there. Mike,
pretty
how about
standard.
You?
Well, I've got, go ahead.
I think Indy Hawks got it half right. I'm going to go Purdue and Ohio State.
Okay, brother Tommy, I forgot what you said there because you ran through
it. I've got 2 teams. Obviously, they wouldn't be the final 2, and I don't have the brackets in front of me, but I have Purdue, like Hawkeye Mike, and I got Baylor. But I have Purdue upsetting Baylor, but I think one of those teams represents.
Wait, Purdue teams. And Baylor would meet in the Sweet 16.
Well, what he's saying is the winner
correct.
Out of that.
I'm
the winner
saying
out of that.
If I'm wrong about Purdue beating Baylor,
oh, okay.
I'm saying,
oh, I thought you were talking about like Final
that.
4. I was just going like the South Championship game. Okay, got it.
So,
right. No,
okay.
You did it right. I did it wrong. I just go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I tend to agree. I think Purdue and Ohio State is as good a. I mean, I think that's as good a solid pick as you're going to have. I mean, again, Baylor could play true to form and upset that, but I think Ohio State on the lower end of that bracket, I think really has Arkansas is a decent team, but I really don't see any team giving Ohio State any trouble on that side of the bracket. Okay, now Midwest.
Hey, wait, real quick, Hank. Let me quickly amend what I said earlier. I do have it in my final 4. I said Ohio State or Purdue. So okay, it's I'm like you. It's Ohio State or Purdue. Okay,
okay.
My other note.
Okay, okay. Now let's go to the Midwest. Indy. How about who do you see in the for the finals of the Midwest?
I went with Illinois and Houston, but it was Illinois and Houston. I just want to clarify, this is my Fauci bracket. I went with the science, but I'll come back and change it 2 weeks from now.
Okay. Mike, how about you? Midwest.
I think Indy Hacks got this one nailed. No surprises here. I'm going to predict ultimately Illinois and Houston, I think, are the 2 teams.
Okay. And brother Tommy,
I've got
Houston winning it all, I thought, if I remember
I've
correctly.
I've got Houston winning it all. I think they would play each other, but the other team I have in that bracket that I like a lot is San Diego State.
Yeah, that's right. You had Loyola. You had Loyola also in there.
I did. There again, one more disclaimer. If Illinois plays like they're playing, they win it all hands down. I'm going on the – premise.
Keep your eye on Oklahoma State in that bracket, though. I think they're a dangerous team.
I'm not sold on Houston. I'm just not. But here's another team in there that I think Illinois is in there. But here's a team in that lower side of that bracket. It's an 11 seed, but it's Syracuse. If there's ever a time, what is it about Syracuse? I mean, if Syracuse is a 4 seed or up, They get knocked out early. They're like the Arizona of the East Coast. I mean, every time they're a high seed, they seem to get knocked out. But every time they're like
a Bayheim does it every year. He's got no business, and he goes to the Final Four. And the guy's like,
he's gone to the Final Four with more 8, 9, and 10 seeds than anybody has a right to expect. So, I mean, Houston will probably take that, but just don't be shocked if Syracuse ends up farther than any of us, you know. Okay, so we're going to go to the East. We're saving the West bracket for last, guys. You know why. East, let's start with brother Tommy. Who are your 2 teams in the East?
All right, I'm just going to tell you what I said. 4 seed Florida State beats 1 seed Michigan. 10 seed Maryland beats 2 seed Alabama. And in the East, I have Florida State winning it. I don't know if they're matched up with Maryland. But Maryland will be my other team, but they're probably not matched up. I did it differently. But
you're right. They would not play until the final.
Okay, good. So. That's what I got. I got Maryland versus Florida State. I have, unfortunately, Florida State winning it. But I think Maryland's a very underrated team. I've seen them play. They're athletic. They've just got to gel, and the minute they gel, they've got the pieces of the puzzle.
Okay, I'm going to go next. I'm going to go Michigan. I know nobody likes that pick, but I'm going to go Michigan and Maryland. I agree. Maryland, you know, they were playing tough at the end of the year. I just think they're – so, Indy, go next. You're up next. You're two in the East.
I have got Florida State beating Michigan without Livers, and then I got Texas beating UConn on the other side with Florida State coming out.
Okay, so you have Florida State and UConn in the – okay, and then Mike – your picks for the East.
I think that not having Livers really is makes a question mark on Michigan. So I do think I'll go along with Indy Hawk on that and pick Florida State to edge them out into the East Championship. And I'm kind of with you guys on Maryland. I think Maryland's a really tough team, and I'm going to go out on a limb there, and I think they get by Alabama, and it's going to. So I'm saying Florida State, Maryland, and. East final.
Okay. We're going to go to the West now. Mike, I'm going to give you first crack on this one.
Well, as a Hawkeye fan, I can't pick against Iowa, so and I just don't see Gonzaga losing until they play Iowa. We'll see. So I'm going to go pretty predictable here. Iowa, Gonzaga in the West final.
Indy?
I've got Iowa Gonzaga, and I had to go with Gonzaga. Dang it.
Oh,
brother Tommy. Brother Tommy.
Yeah, I got there again. I had the two that are going to one of the two is going to represent. I don't know if they would play each other or not. I don't have the brackets in front of me. But I have Virginia or USC. So I don't know if they play, but to me it's going to be either Virginia or USC. I love Iowa. Jeez, I hope I'm proven wrong. Hey, Hank, real quick thing. Someone on the text did a question with me. With all the Big Ten teams being in Indy for 2 weeks since Big Ten tourney, is this an advantage or disadvantage for these kids to be in hotel room for over 4 weeks? I put, good question, no clue here, but ask the boys, 515, you know who that is.
Yeah, it would be T. Bodie. I mean, with all the Big Ten teams being in Indy for 2 weeks, is this an advantage or disadvantage? That's what I was going to ask Indy. What do you think on that?
Well, I know we got to get Bohannon to stop tweeting about the NCAA. That's, you know, I hope that doesn't get to the officiating or whatever else. But I mean, he's just going off. But I think it's good. I mean, I don't know if it matters either way. I think it'll be.
I think it's a slight advantage because I think, look, these guys are living basketball right now. All the teams, including Iowa, they're prepping, they're psyched. They've been there now in the same place. I think that helps them. You know, I don't think they're. I think that they're not fighting boredom because I think they're staying pretty busy. But you know, we'll see.
I haven't been on the boards. What's Paul Hankin tweeting about?
No, it's on the Twitter. He
gave that press conference too.
Yeah, none of the
where,
you remember
after the
remember Kirk Ferentz had the Twitter ban for the football players. None of the football players have ever embarrassed themselves on Twitter the way Bohannon has. I mean, Bohannon has
just
been.
Well, what did he do? I'm asking. I'm not being cute. I really don't know what he did. I don't follow this.
He's got a video where he's showing what the NCAA gave him, and he's going through deodorant and just mocking what they, you know, whatever they gave them.
Poor taste.
Okay. Hey, listen, I got a quick question I wanted to ask Indy Hawk based on what he said when he picked Gonzaga to edge out Iowa. Like, if Iowa does get to that Elite Eight to play Gonzaga, you know, that means they've won three games. Do you give them any credence there that maybe they're on a roll and Gonzaga better watch out?
I would love that. I'd rip that bracket up so fast. I'd love it. You know, one thing, when we played Gonzaga, I think they're one of the best teams in a long time. They have a chance. One thing that might be a factor is they're looking at an undefeated season the first time since Indiana did it in 76. So maybe they start to get a little tight, you know, on some of the shots outside. But anyway, they had us down. We lost by 11, but they had us down like 20. We made a miraculous run to cut it to 11 at the end. But that's just a really
right.
Awesome. I mean, they got three NBA picks in the top 15. Another kid from Florida that transferred. They're just really good. I looked at like That's why I was asking about what you guys think of Gonzaga, because the first thing that pops into my head is mid-major. Then you start researching them, and they're just – ESPN had a thing where 24 of the 32 experts had Gonzaga winning it. It's just crazy.
Yeah.
But remember,
well, you know,
a couple
I think
of
Gonzaga
years ago
is the team to beat, but they played a pretty – I mean, that conference they're in, you know, they're playing the St. Mary's and the Cal Santa Barbara's, and I mean, I just question the rigor of the schedule they have. If they played the Big Ten, you know, all year, do you think they'd be undefeated? I think they'd dropped a game or two somewhere.
Oh, I think they would.
Four
would
or five.
Definitely be the same. Yeah, but they played seven. I think it's seven of the top 27 teams, and they beat five of them by 10. They beat the others by 8 and 6. So I mean, they've got a little bit of a test in it. But
what is it, 5 years? I think it's 5 or 6 years from Kentucky being undefeated going into the tournament. It's a tough thing to pull off. The
I think of the ones
that
have
history. So when it's a four-point game with 3 minutes left, they don't know what to do. They listen to coach, but they haven't been there. That's the only
problem. Remember,
you
had St. Joe's in like 2004 or 5 with Jameer Nelson, and they got the regional final. Then you had Wichita State, and they went down like in the second round or third round. I mean, it's just a different animal for those conferences. I mean, God love them. I'm glad mid-majors make an impact, but it is not the same thing. I mean, you know, UCF, they talked about UCF's undefeated season in football when they beat Auburn and everything. And people said, wow, what if they played any major conference schedule? Look, those teams, they are good teams, and they can get up for that. But, man, playing an SEC or a Big Ten or even a Big 12 schedule, you know, year after year after year, no. I just don't see – I don't think – you know, look, we saw it with Nebraska in football. You know, they really didn't. Look, you've seen it in a way in basketball with the realignment of the Big East. I mean, you've seen teams that were powers. Look, Syracuse has come out of the Big East and not really done much in the ACC. And yet somehow they, like I said, that's the 11th seed kiss of death that always makes the Final Four for Boeheim. But you know,
you want to throw in when you talk Big Ten football, the other one you want to throw in, I remember people saying, oh, Penn State's going to the Big Ten, they're going to dominate. No, they can dominate in one game. But if you have to play Big Ten football week after week, I'm sorry, you get beat up. Nebraska, Hawkeye Mike pointed it out earlier, a shadow of what they were before they went to the Big Ten. And Penn State, yeah, they had the 1 year, but the Big Ten's the Big Ten. Conferences do matter. You're going to get that whack team every once in a while.
Yep.
Bottom line, nope.
Yeah, but
let's look
at the other side of it. Let's take the other side of it. Look who's made the Big Ten. Look who's made the national title game in recent history. Butler twice has made it. You know, I mean, so that you can't just say, I mean, you had that one Final Four in 2006 that was like George Mason and, you know, all these other, I mean, but I think the gap is closing more in basketball than it is in football. I just think
One interesting thing on Gonzaga is they just crushed us on the board. I look back at that box score. Nungy played like 25 minutes, had like had a great game, but he basically had to play him a lot, and he's gone.
Yeah.
And now, I don't know if that's, but I think we can shoot the three.
Iowa doesn't go anywhere against Gonzaga if they don't have much improved A, defense, and B, perimeter play. And it stunk. It stunk in December when they played.
Yeah. Well, yeah, if you remember, Gonzaga went after every loose ball like it was the national championship game, you know?
Yeah, they outplayed Iowa. They
out-hustled, but they out-hustled. I mean, Bohannon didn't get open shots on the perimeter because Gonzaga's guys got in his face they stayed on assignment. And the other thing that I think is different with basketball than football, it's a little less now. You're not bringing in 30-year-olds like some of the schools were for a while, but you're getting that Gonzaga has had the foreign players that come over here and start playing at, you know, at age 20, 22. And, you know, that's a difference. That's not going to happen in football. You know, you're not going to see 27-year-olds come over here, from Russia and make a difference in football. But in basketball, that can happen. You remember Arvydas Sabonis' kid was on that Gonzaga team that crushed us back in 2015 in the tournament, if you remember. I mean, that was a good team.
Peter Principal does set in, though. Hank, you had mentioned about Butler going to the Final Four and all of that. Give me the last team that won the national championship.
Virginia?
ACC's not an – no, I meant from an obscure conference.
Oh, that's obscure team? Loyola in 1963?
You have to go back.
UTEP.
Yeah,
UCLA, I think, in 66. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
you guys are going back 55 years. You're proving my point.
Yeah.
Yeah, Sister Jean was 70 back then.
Exactly.
Hey, you know, Drake came within a whisker of beating that great UCLA Lou Alcindor team in 69.
I did not know that.
But they did not do it. Well, they lost to 85-82, a kind of a controversial ending there, but also a mistake by Drake costing the game at the end. But,
was that their last Final Four? Did they go like 70 or 71 as well?
They didn't get to the Final Four, but they were in the tournament in 71. I know. I think that was the last time Drake was in the tournament, except for that 2008 when they lost. They had a good team and lost in the first round.
Yeah, they lost to Davidson.
Adam guy, I can't remember his last name.
Adam Emenacher.
He's got a sandwich named after him. That's right.
Whatever happened in Northern Iowa? They seem to have fallen off the map. They used to be a perennial, at least invited to the
Since McDermott's been gone, they just haven't been as consistent. I mean, I think Jacobson's done a decent job, but he's still McDermott.
By the way, I don't know. The rumor I'm hearing is Hoiberg might go back to Iowa State. We'll have to see. I think that caused some controversy because I know some Iowa State fans, like my brother, that feel like he burned bridges when he left. I said, you know, I'd give the guy a break. I mean, he didn't leave to go to another college. He went to the NBA, to the Bulls, in fact. Hard to do that. But there's some hard feelings there. But there are rumors that maybe he's coming back. But I also heard, not to pick up on what Tom said, that Hornacek flew into Ames. But we'll see what happens there.
Here's what we don't want to see at Michigan, because that's the Big Ten. Well, Indiana. I'm sorry. That's what I meant, Indiana. What we don't want to see in Indiana is John Beilein. No.
Why would Beilein?
I don't think it's necessarily realistic. But I mean, because Beilein could get it done. I think Beilein could get it done in Indiana. I mean,
I understand the differences, but my point is, back to my Patino, and I'm screaming fault here, Patino and Mike White. These guys have great years, and they're put on a pedestal, but second of all, he wouldn't do it. He got it done at Michigan.
Then again, Juwan Howard's also getting it done at Michigan, so that's...
I'll ask this. Who didn't get it done at Michigan for the most part? In other words, they're a juggernaut. I mean, they're in Big Ten, what, top three, four basketball teams? They can recruit. Like you said, Juwan Howard, his first year, his second year, he's knocked it out of the park.
There's a report that Iowa State has hired UNLV's TJ Otzelberger, O-T-Z-E-S.
I talked about that. I really think he was an assistant under McDermott and Hoiberg and Prohm, and he's been big in their recruiting success over the years, which really has been nothing more than going out and getting transfers if you really want to, you know, face facts. But I don't know what his involvement with Xavier Foster was. But my guess is he was there, you know, at the end of Hoiberg. My guess is that his reason to be there is to keep that roster intact, to deaden any loss, because he was there up until 2015, I think.
The real undertone was that Eustace might come back, but I'm kidding on that. He gave up the frat parties. You know, that's ancient history.
That's right.
He's on the up and up now.
Hank, you just brought up the most important part, as far as I'm concerned, or one of the most important parts of basketball. And I'll tell you who's going to be the new Duke. As long as Howard stays there, Michigan's the new Duke. He's already got the number one recruiting class next year, and – That guy's going to be able to recruit out of the wazoo, just like George Raveling. I think you guys know where I'm going with that, but it's a fact. It's not. There's nothing biased or anything like that. He's going to be a great recruiter. Juwan Howard is going to be probably coach of the year the next 4 years.
Yeah.
That's my opinion anyways. He's going to be able to recruit, and he's not a bad game coach. I mean,
yeah. Okay, let's go to the next. I'm going to start with Indy Hawk. What do you think of the Hawks' future prospects? Assuming, let's pretend that Wieskamp stays, first of all. How do you feel in the next couple of years?
I feel really good. I think that it's interesting because McCaffrey just does not get high level recruits. He's top 200. He just signed a center last week.
Yep.
I think he's a top 220 something. But
yep.
I'm really high on Nungy. The NBA likes Nungy. He's got a lot of. The guy can stay healthy and catch a break. The freshman class is way better than what they were rated at coming in.
Yeah.
They all look like they can contribute. They got to get Ogundale off the donuts. Get him down if you want. But they look like
I think he's been at the bagel buggy outside the field house.
Yeah, exactly. I think Wieskamp, if he comes back, they can talk him and, hey, well, you're going to be the feature guy. But to me, they got to get C.J. Frederick shots. That's one complaint. I know I've texted you guys a few times, but he's on pace to be the all-time NCAA percent three-point shooter. And we got guys firing up shots all over. We just don't get him the shots enough. But.
Yeah. Well, he's injury prone too. I mean, he's got glass bones in his feet or something. I mean, he can't seem to stay healthy for whatever reason.
Yeah,
so Mike has dropped out.
Glass jaw on that video game.
Yeah, exactly. But it's his glass bones. So, Tommy, what do you think?
Not as optimistic. I think we're going back to regular Big Ten play, so we're going to probably play Michigan twice. We're going to play Illinois twice. That right there, Illinois is a very young team. That right there, and a couple of them are going to go pro, but they're still good. Underwood's done a phenomenal job there. So there's four L's. I look at high-level NIT, low-level NCAA. I'm not as optimistic, but Hawkeye Mike will tell you that I'm always a little too pessimistic about my team. I root for them, but I prepare myself for the worst, hope for the best. I don't see it after this year. I think this is our chance this year, but in the next few years, make the tournament. Hopefully, and that's the extent of it. I don't see us getting better, that for sure.
Mike, what about you? What do you think of the future Hawks prospects? I'm
with Indy Hawk. I'm not saying that they're going to be the same team they were this year, but I think they're going to be good for the next couple of years. I like the team. I like these freshmen that are coming up. I think Keegan Murray, it's going to be a different team. I think Keegan Murray is going to be the star in the next couple of years. And if we get Nungy back, I think that's really important. Is that guy going to be – I don't, maybe you guys know more about it than I do. How serious is it? I mean, he's already was out with a ACL. Now he's got a torn meniscus. I don't know.
So this is not an ACL. This is not an ACL.
Yeah.
This is a meniscus. I mean, theoretically with meniscus, he could be back playing in summer league stuff if they had it, the interesting thing will be the development of Keegan Murray's twin brother, Chris, because, neither one was when they were signed, people were saying, well, this was just a favorite of Kenyon Murray. But, man, Keegan has certainly proven to be everything that his father was, so to speak. And if Chris develops at the same rate, he was maybe just in his brother's shadow. But, I mean, that would be, it'd be like the McCray brothers in Oklahoma or Louisville, Rodney and Scooter McCray or that kind of thing. I mean, if you could see that development. But I worry about the middle. I mean, Nungy plays with his facing the basket a lot more than he ever plays with his back to the basket. So there's that worry. But, I forget Connor and Patrick McCaffrey. Now, no, Connor McCaffrey is not the scorer that we probably would, quote, want him to be. But I think he's a great floor leader. And I think Patrick McCaffrey has got a lot of physical talent. I think he's a little bit of a hyper-spazzed, eager to score when he gets the ball. You've seen in my text, I call him a ball hog. But I think he's got some talent. I think he's got some leaping ability. I think.
Oh, I agree. Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree too.
I mean,
the
maybe if you
have
could...
with your Connor McCaffrey argument is the one problem is his speeds. 90% of them are to Garza. You are not going to have Garza around next year. That's the only problem with Connor.
Yeah.
At least he's also a speed next year, so we're done with
him. Feed it to other people. Yeah.
Well, who's going to post up down there?
You're getting more fundamental. Garza is not replaceable. I mean, you're going to have another Garza. But
right. Who's going to post up?
Murray will still be good, and I think they will.
Yeah, because you give if you could give 20 of Ogundele's pounds to Patrick McCaffrey, things would look really good next year. Let's just put it that way.
Well, you don't need that. Look at Indianapolis and UCLA, Miller, Reggie Miller. Yeah, you don't need weight. That's a misconception.
Yeah,
but
Reggie Miller was also an outside shooting off-guard swing player.
If McCaffrey's going to make it, Patrick, he's going to have to become that. That's why they played him so much when what's-his-name went down. Because they're
Patrick's a 3-4. He's not a 2, or he's certainly not a 1, but he's not a 3. He's a 3-4. He's not a 2. He's not a 5
Larry
either.
Larry Bird was a 3-4. What's his name? Miller was a 3-4. I'm sorry.
Miller was a 2. Miller was a 2-3 at most. He was never a 4.
Wrong.
Miller never played.
Wrong. Google
inside.
It right now. Reggie Miller was a 3. That's
maybe,
wrong.
Yeah, but he was
he
never
was a 3 at UCLA. He was a 3 at Indianapolis. Both, no. Yeah, all right. Well, I'm not going to argue about it, but no.
Right.
He's going to have to shoot.
Yeah.
He's not going
to
be a post-up player. He's never been one.
No, he's not a post-up player. Certainly not. No. But
so don't you guys think we would be an ideal target for a transfer portal? We have one scholarship available, and you talk about
I couldn't agree more. Yep.
You know, Indy, you mentioned that.
Absolutely.
That's the thing. We've only got one scholarship available. That's probably the tough part of it. You know, I mean, it's not like you've got, you know, you can really get aggressive, you know, knowing you have one, but, you know, there's this, the other side of it is that, you know, you're not going to get a tandem that comes in. You're not going to get a guy that maybe has a little brother who's a freshman and wanting to come in, that kind of thing. I mean, it also limits you, but, you know.
But Indy Hawk has a very good point in the sense that after what we just did, any big man would be salivating to go to Iowa if they watched how Iowa focused on Garza. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So it's like you can go to Duke or you can go to Iowa. Well, geez, Iowa likes to feed the big guy. Yeah. So, no, I agree with that. I actually hadn't thought about that, but that's very true. We could get a good
spend the summer with the Garza and then come play for Iowa.
Yep. Absolutely.
So, okay. So next question. Garza is the National Player of the Year, at least for Sporting News. He probably will be AP and probably the Wooden and all that. Where is he going to go pro-wise? Do you think he's going to get drafted, first of all? There's a lot of talk that he won't.
Everything I've seen says mid-second round.
Yeah.
I think he gets drafted. I don't know. For some reason, I do this with Iowa players. I don't know why. It's something in my head. I always see him ending up playing for the Celtics.
Yep.
I see him with the Celtics, you know. Yeah.
I could see him in Europe.
That guard we had, too. Hank, what was
Gamble.
That guard we had that went after
Kevin
his
Gamble.
First year? No, the one recently. Wasn't he with the Celtics or was he with the Knicks? Guy played his freshman year, ended up scoring like 30 a game in the pros. And then
Ricky Davis?
Yes.
Also, Kevin Gamble played for the Celtics for a long time, too.
Yeah,
Kevin Gamble had a great career.
Yep, he did.
He did.
So, yeah, okay. So, do you think back to the question about Tim Doyle? I mean, Tim Doyle's, you know, he's been on Big Ten Network. I think he's with Fox now. Do you think what is he seeing? I haven't really read his. I've just saw his bracket. Has anybody read anything that he actually said, or why he picked Iowa or anything?
Not me.
No,
I have not.
I would only say about him from his lips to God's ears. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, certainly.
The other thing I will say is that Iowa.
But I'm not.
Mike,
I don't know.
Mike pointed it out. I think Indy did too. If we fire on all cylinders, we can play with anyone in the country. My doubt is that we're all five going to fire on all cylinders. But if we do, and that's got to be his. Angle, maybe he saw us play against Ohio State the second game or whatever, and he's like, when we were firing on all cylinders.
because we can do it. I just don't think we're
going
to. Well,
you know, we can get to the Elite Eight. We can get to the Gonzaga game without firing on all five cylinders if we're firing on three or four.
I don't know.
Well, to get past Gonzaga and then to get to the championship, we have to be firing on all five cylinders. Yeah, absolutely.
We got to get Ivan Drago at Green Canyon.
I kind of agree with Indy Hawk.
Don't take anything for granted. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh no, and I agree with Indy Hawk in the sense that, in my mind, Oregon frightens the hell out of me. That would be our second game. They frighten the hell out of me. Athletic teams. Frightened the hell out of me, and
Iowa should be frightened about anybody because we've seen them lay eggs, and they
I could not agree more.
If they're not really ready to go, it's going to be tough. You know, they won't get very
far. I could not agree more. That's why I don't have them going far. You're right. They do not show up all the time. And that's my fear. Yep. But if they do they can play with that.
We're not a quick team either.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that's terrifies me.
So, but Indy Hawk was saying earlier, I mean, just talking about Grand Canyon, what conference do they play in?
I don't know.
Aren't they
like a West
Coast? Just kidding.
I want to know what the recruiting budget is. Italy, Denmark,
Has anybody actually seen them? I haven't even seen them. I mean, I don't even know. So,
are they in Arizona school? I don't even know where they're located. That's what I'm thinking. Like they're Northern Arizona or something like that.
Well, you know, when Indy Hawk talks about Grand Canyon, I mean, guys, and Hank's already lambasted offered. Just remember Northwestern State, wasn't that it? When we were a 3-seed and we lost to them?
Northeastern, wasn't it?
No, it was Northwestern State.
Northwestern State. Yeah, oh, God, that was one of the worst losses in Iowa. That team won the Big Ten championship. A great win over Ohio State, and then they just dropped dead in the first round.
The actual worst part about that is that we were up 17 in the first half, and then ended up going in at halftime only up like 6. Then we were up.
I hate to be the bad guy here. The only thing worse was. And Hank and I were watching it at a bar.
But at least that was in the Elite Eight. To drop a game in the first round, that team, they won 25 games, and they just dropped dead like that. You know, it's just really disappointing. Well, the Elite Eight, that's the worst loss, 87 in Iowa basketball history, I think.
That was my fault. I was thinking about the Final Four in that game. So that's on me.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think I've said it before.
Final Four game, you're always sitting there, if we'd had Lester healthy, you know, McGuire said it, Lute Olson said it, we, you know, think I would have done it that year. You know, Al McGuire said that, you know, if Lester hadn't gone down. So, you know, but we'll never know. So.
Okay,
I've
now
said
here's
it before
here's,
on the Hank show. The real quick, I've said it before on the Hank show. Bobby Knight did a faux pas, which, as we know, Bobby Knight doesn't mind doing. But he said literally after the UNLV game in one of the interviews, he said, I'm sure glad UNLV won because I did not want to play Iowa. And that's when they won it all with
Here's a quick rundown on Grand Canyon. They're in the WAC. Now, it's not your dad's WAC. It's the California Baptist Lancers, the Chicago State Cougars, the Dixie State Trailblazers, the Grand Canyon Antelopes, the New Mexico State Aggies, the Seattle U Red Hawks, the Tarleton Texans, the UT Rio Grande Valley Vaqueros and the Utah Valley Wolverines. So, if you're gonna take any solace in Grand Canyon getting people to foul and all that stuff, they've probably not faced Big Ten caliber schedule. Just saying.
Yep.
I mean,
oh, they haven't.
So,
sure.
I think you know if Iowa would just shoot some decent shots to get going in the early from the perimeter, that'll just destroy Grand Canyon because then they won't otherwise. But if they don't and they're able to collapse, I think like Indy Hawk was pointing out, and maybe really do a number on Garza, get him into foul trouble. That's when Iowa could have some trouble. So Iowa
we
just
should,
comes out
and run him in
the
ground, the
perimeter and put it away. Yeah.
Now here are their losses. They're 17-6. They lost by a point to Arizona State. They lost by 3 to San Francisco, 10 to Colorado. They lost to California Baptist by 3. They lost to Seattle U by 6. And they lost to Utah Valley by 4. So, you know, I'm not going to go on. I'm like, you know, anything can happen. We got to remember that. But I'm feeling slightly better that we're not playing a team that has thrown fear. And, of course, neither did Northwestern State. But I'm not feeling like we're playing a team that's going to sneak up out of nowhere and that we've missed this team that's got all this talent. No, I think we're playing
I'll throw something in sacrilegious.
Formidable in their
conference. If I'm McCaffrey, I'm like, gentlemen, I'm going to give you guys rain on the floor. You're going to beat them. So we're not even preparing for them. I know this is sacrilegious in basketball or even football. We're not preparing for them. We're preparing for Oregon round 2. I say you don't waste your time.
I'll counter that with Norman Dale and Hoosiers.
Who is the last number two?
There's a saying, you never talk about the next game.
Who is the last number two?
Oh, I know the cliches. I'm just saying I break the cliche model here. I know the cliches. Yeah. I'm painfully familiar with them. I'm just saying this is the time you break it. You work on Oregon.
Who's the last number two?
Does anyone know who the last number two was that lost in the first round?
It was last year, 2 years ago, in 01.
Was it?
Whoa,
I know.
Whoa,
I don't
whoa,
know. Virginia was the first number one team to lose, so that was
right. I just wonder when the last time a two lost.
Michigan State loses a two years ago. Michigan State is a two a couple of years ago.
I don't know. I think you're right.
So, guys, we
got to cut it short because we've got to. I got to close it out, and I want to close it out by playing the Hawkeye fight song. But I want to thank Indy Hawk, Brother Tommy and Hawkeye Mike for being here, guys. Thanks a lot. It's been fun. It really has.
We'll keep up on the tech.
Thanks, Sue, for being here earlier, and Big Sister and T Bodie. I also want to thank Banjo 80, Indy Hawk on the chat room, and Vito. Thanks for being here all. We've had a good time. It's not been the kind of usual stuff we go through, but hey, it's what it's been. So hey, guys, we're gonna send it out with the Iowa fight song, and we'll see you on text.
All right, thanks, guys.
Yep, thank you, guys.
Hey, take care, everyone.
You got it. You too.
Good night, folks. Thanks for being here.